Welcome to this brand new episode of the Bridge to China podcast. Bridge to China is a podcast by Hummel Tech Bridge and produced by Ilu. With this podcast, we want to answer the most pressing questions European startups may have when it comes to the topic China. My name is Max Glinschel, and in today's episode, I'm going to speak with two experts of the venture capital and startup ecosystems in Europe and China. Their names are Chao Wu and Luis Heinz.
Hi, Chao and Luis. Very warm welcome from my side. Thanks for joining me today here in this new episode of the Bridge to China podcast. Basically, today we want to discuss the developments, but also the similarities and the differences between the European and the Chinese startup and VC ecosystem. And you guys are both professionals from these areas. Chao, hi. Happy to be speaking with you today. Chao is an investment professional currently working for an Asian VC fund here in Berlin. Before working on investments, he led the growth of his own company in the material science space in China. Chao, you are originally from China, right?
That's correct, yeah. Originally, I'm from China.
Yes, and your company focuses on early stage companies, especially in the deep tech space, and you opened this new office for them here in Berlin. That's also right.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And on the other side, we have someone from the European ecosystem. This is Luis. Warm welcome to you as well. Happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yes, and Luis is also a VC professional. He's a senior investment manager at a German VC fund called Hightech Gründerfonds. And if I'm not mistaken, you guys also focus on early stage companies from the deep tech environment, right?
Yes, we focus on seed investments in technology companies ranging from hardware over life science to classical software companies. Yes.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, and that's why I'm also so happy to have you both here today, because with this discussion today, we want to shed a bit more light about what really means it when you talk about the Chinese tech ecosystem and VC ecosystem, and also when you compare it to the European one. So of course, there's different developments also recently with COVID and so on. So different developments, and we can also see distinct similarities, I would assume, and also a lot of differences. So to directly start into this topic, I would like to open with a question to Chao. And I mean, you maybe also as a little background, you're currently working for this Korean VC, but you're obviously from China and you have a background in material science. And you also were the CEO of a Chinese startup in the material science space a few years ago.
Exactly. I set up a startup in China with the co-founder, with my partner, a couple of years ago, and then I worked with a Chinese VC as well who want to expand to Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super interesting. So basically, my first question to you would be, in your opinion, what's really special about the Chinese VC market? For example, which entities of the VC market are the most prominent investors? And how is the ecosystem in general connected to the rest of the Asian market and globally?
Sure. First of all, thanks for the invitation and a nice intro. So just my personal opinion, based on my experience, besides all the data you can pull out from the internet, there are some special things I can summarize about Chinese VC market. The first one, I'll say the sectors, the popular sectors and the hot areas, investment areas in China, has a strong correlation with government policy. So basically, in China, government participates more actively than the other developed countries. So that means to be successful, it's good, but it's very critical, I'll say, to be able to follow and understand the government policy and form a coherent opinion on it, and to really analyze and understand the underlying logics of it behind all those policies. This will help you in a long way. The second point I'll say, second special thing about it is comparing to other VC market, especially to US. Chinese VC investors and market are more risk averse, I'll say, because I think if I remember right, there's high percentage of the investments still goes to the growth at the later stage of the company. Mm-hmm. So that means at the very early stage, there's a little bit lacking. I mean, the last point I can add is it actually follows my last point, because since it's more risk averse, people prefer short-term return. They focus a lot on the short-term return. So when they see opportunity on a short-term return, which they think is a good investment opportunity, they'll act very fast and aggressively. So maybe, yeah, this is probably not new to you, but this is something special about Chinese investment, I would say. And regarding to the main players or prominent investors in Chinese market, I would say there are two groups of investors. One is the local investors. Basically, they invest. They have like a RMB fund. Basically, it's RMB is a Chinese currency. So they have the local currency fund. And there's another group investor, which is dollar fund. So the international investors usually set up the dollar funds, of course. And if you look at the trend in the past couple of years, the dollar funds have recorded some really impressive closings. So they become more and more prominent in Chinese market. So if I remember last year, the largest dollar fund close in China was 1.2 billion. This is early stage venture capital fund. So it's very impressive. Of course, given the difficult time right now in the pandemic, I'll say the sentiment, of course, changed a little bit among the foreign investors. But in general, I'll say Asian and European investors are more poised given this complex and difficult situation. On the other side, the American investors, especially institutional, are still committed. Of course, their exposure is never high on Chinese market. So that's probably the reason why they are still committed and not so much panic when you talk about investment. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, super interesting. Thanks for these insights. I mean, so we have basically a strong correlation with government sectors. We have Chinese investors are more risk averse. And the main players within this market, would you say, are these also VC companies, or are these bigger firms, for example? Like, what are these players that invest there?
That's similar to any other markets. You have private investors, Chinese local institutional investors. You have CVCs. CVC, yes, catching up, probably not so big as in US or Europe, but it's catching up.
CVCs, corporate VCs, you mean?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then you have the foreign investors. Yeah, usually, they join, okay, participate through the dollar funds.
Okay, understand. And going over to Luis, now we heard a bit about how this Chinese market is structured. Maybe you can also give us a bit your side of the experience. So how can you describe the dynamics in Europe, and from your point of view, how would you say, does it differ from the Chinese perspective?
Yes, of course. Maybe first of all, to give a bit of context, I'm in the digital tech investment team for Hightech Gründerfonds, which is important to notice because there are different dynamics in the different industries we invest in. So everything I'm talking about right now is about software, internet, startups, and less about drug development or hardware investments. I think for like the field I'm in, we mainly invest in Germany, but of course our companies also raise follow-on financing rounds in Europe. And I think that the borders kind of play less and less of a role. There's a lot of money flowing cross borders at the moment. Also a lot of venture capital funds from the US investing in pre-seed rounds in European startups. I think that's something that is a rather new development. Before it was, of course, Europe was an interesting market already for investors outside of Europe, but more in a bit of a later stage. So Series A investments, maybe even also Series B. And now we even see pre-seed rounds with US participation. I think that's one large development that we see here. The second topic is what I find interesting is a lot of money from experienced and successful founders flowing back into the ecosystem. I think, I don't know how that is in China, but as there's been the first or second wave already of successful exits, I think that's a development that we see, which I think is great, that former founders also act as business angels. In the field I'm investing in, a lot of funds move into the early stages more and more because competition is high for the good deals. But for a long time, there was a lack. And to include again the drug development, hardware investments, I think there still is a risk averseness, as Zhao described it, for China, which is why we are here actually as Hightech Gründerfonds. It's one of our main mission statements to enable also those industries, early stage startups to build up.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. Super interesting. I want to get back to the COVID topic a bit later. So this is definitely also something I think that's really, really interesting to look at, especially when looking at the development of the last years. Maybe one quick question also in regards to Zhao, after we have now also looked at the different political implications for the VC and startup ecosystem. From what I learned before, that I also perceived as one of the main differences would be that in China, for example, we have also a lot of big tech companies who make up a big chunk of the investments into the startups. So for example, Tencent or Alibaba or other big tech companies, they are actually one of the biggest Chinese investors in these startups. As compared, for example, in Europe, we don't really have these big European tech companies who would act as a VC in that regard. Would you say that this is something that is true? Or maybe you can shed a bit more light on this particular instance there, Zhao.
I think what you describe is basically correct. These big techs in China have most of them have a very active investment arm in early stage company. I think this is very important for them to grow, to diversify their business. When they reach certain stage, of course, they need to look for new growth area. And I think the concept is the same everywhere.
Mm. Yeah, and these big tech companies in China, they also not only invest in China, obviously, but around the whole world, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's maybe go to a bit of a different part of the discussion. And this would be also to get a bit more into the different sectors, technologies that are most present in these markets. For example, what do you guys think? Are there specific sectors or technologies that are currently very, very sought for in your particular respective markets? Which ones are these, and why would you say are they currently in high demand in China or in Europe? Maybe Luis, you want to start?
To differentiate a bit, I think there are very hyped topics currently, which most obviously, if you look into at the last financing rounds, huge fintech financing rounds, Trade Republic, N26, Revolut, and so on. So fintech, I think it's very hype, but it's already most of those financing rounds were already at later stages. And I think what I personally look at a lot currently is digital health topics, also because there Germany was on the forefront of regulating prescription of digital therapeutics, because it's a very undigitalized sector, and because I think there's a lot of potential in that segment, also Europe-wise, because European regulation is synchronizing, and there's a huge opportunity in my perspective. And of course, recently, all those tokenization topics became relevant, and also we have two portfolio companies that tackle the market of tokenization of, for example, in-game items, or also for financial products. And we see a huge demand there from customers, but also from the investor side. So I think that's a future topic that will for sure become even more relevant. So that's most probably the most relevant ones. And we focus mainly on B2B, those quick commerce startups are nothing that we look into more. I'm curious to see how they evolve into the next years, but I wouldn't, maybe I'm mistaken, but I wouldn't call that like a huge hype topic anymore, because like I think first wave is through, they will understand the business models, and maybe the second wave will come, but it's not like for me the same sector like as fintech or digital health or also the whole like Web 3.0 topic.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the gorillas and Gettys of the last year when you talk about the quick commerce.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yes. We'll come to Corona again, but I think it's a great speed at which startups adopted to the situations and scaled and took the opportunity. Yes, but not our focus.
Okay, so yeah, Chao, maybe giving it over to you, do you see a similar focus also in the Chinese ecosystem? Is there a similar focus on tokenization topics, for example, or also on the healthcare market, also in respect of, to the developments we had during COVID? Maybe you can give us a little insight in this market there.
Okay, given my background and expertise, I'm naturally more intimate to hardware technology in materials and industrial related sectors. But I can confirm that the medtech is always very hot or sought after sectors in China. So coming to my areas, the popular sectors immediately coming to my mind will be semiconductors and energy transition. The reason being that, of course, for semiconductors, we all know that given the development of the international relationship in the past couple of years, China emphasizes a lot on the independent IP, right, on the whole value chain of the semiconductor industry. So there, China has a lot of areas to improve and to innovate. I think this is going to be a sector that a lot of eyes will have. For the energy transition, of course, it's perfect timing right now, right? So we have an imminent environment crisis, and this transition will lead many new markets with great opportunity and the high potential. And of course, China is at the point where they need to upgrade their technology. So if you combine all these factors together, you'll see this sector will become, actually is becoming a very sought after sector.
Yeah, maybe to add on that, because actually that's one sector I forgot, the whole sustainability sector, which I think is something we are very well prepared for in Europe. I think there's a lot of innovation, a lot of good universities where those new ideas can evolve. And there are a lot of new venture capital funds tackling the sustainability topic, which I think is very important. We, of course, do so as well. And I think in the future, coming back to like capital needs, a lot of hardware that has to be funded as well. It's not going to be enough if software companies are funded in that segment. I think that they are the stars will shine for, like, because we talk about venture capital today, for venture capital investors that also do hardware investments.
As a person standing on both boats, I'll say, yeah, it's, in Europe, this topic is also very, very hot.
Maybe a short follow-up question here. Luis, you talked also about what talent plays for a role, for example, in respect to the climate tech space and also the sustainability development. I mean, this is definitely important for all technology areas that a good education and specific education is very, very crucial for that. Is there a specific area where we could say that, for example, the European market is focusing with its education more predominantly on a specific area? And is, for example, the Chinese market focusing on a similar area or maybe a different one from an education perspective speaking? Maybe you guys have some insight there, something that you perceived in your personal experiences?
I'm not an expert here, so it's my personal opinion. I think that there's like the right mindset currently regarding which problems to tackle. And I believe, now speaking for Germany, that we're still very good and at the forefront of innovation universities in the technical environment, which in a combination is, I think, helpful. if the right people with the right mindset get a good education, something will come out of it. And I don't know if there's, like, I can't answer the question if there's a specific field in the sustainability context where we are especially good at, but I think, like, as I said, the combination of good universities, also affordable education for everyone, people studying with the mindset to change the world for better. I'm optimistic that that will help Europe as a relevant player in that environment.
Max, probably you need to repeat or rephrase your question for me because I'm not sure I get.
Yeah, so I've tried to understand if there is a difference in the subjects that people are choosing, for example, in China and in Europe, when you also connect it to the technologies that are prominent in the market. So, for example, in China, we know that a lot of interest is in the area of artificial intelligence. So I guess a lot of people would also study something in this area, whereas in Europe and in Germany, we have this urge for a lot of sustainability topics. So you see a lot of people also indulging into these topics in university. So I was just trying to look if we maybe can also see a trend for this from a startup perspective. So is there more people who studied sustainability, for example, coming into this market, or more people who studied AI or other technical areas? I'm not sure about this, so that's why I thought you guys might be able to shed some light on this.
Oh, okay, understand. If you look at AI, like what you mentioned, and if you compare AI and the energy-related majors or sectors, of course, they are very different in many different ways. Sure. I'm not sure they're comparable. Of course, for AI or digital field or sectors, that's where a lot of money go in. And there are a lot of money in there already. Mm. So those jobs are, in general, say better paid. And of course, that will affect people's decision when they choose major. But however, in the end, if you look at on a bigger scale, larger scale, you will see how many jobs are created by investment, by those sectors. So I'll say if we believe in energy transition, and this will be a huge job market, and if we believe in this topic, that will generate a lot of potential and opportunities. So yeah, I think this sector will thrive and flourish, I think.
Yeah, probably also quite a big topic that we could also speak about for a few hours, I guess. So let's maybe move on and get back to the VC topic in general. So we also already quickly touched it before. We have in Europe and China a lot of money that is available for startups currently. So it increased over the last years and more money is available for startups. And for me, it would be very interesting to try to understand the differences between the Chinese and the European market in the changing environment for the founders. So for example, when the money flows that are coming into the market are steadily increasing, then this obviously has to imply something for the founders and how it changes the general landscape of the startup and the VC area in general. So it would be interesting to get your views on this, how this is changing. And maybe Chao, you want to start?
So what I can say is, despite the difficult time and the pandemic and all this in the last couple of years, but I think there are still enough capitals in the market to fund early stage projects and the startups. Again, it's good to separate between this hard, very traditional sectors and new emerging sectors like digital related topics. Mm-hmm. I think for the less exec heavy sectors like digital related, there are plenty of funding. Yeah. If you have a startup with good technology and the business model, you will get funded. Not a problem, in my opinion. On the other side, it's relatively lacking because for the asset heavy sectors at the moment, it still relies on, to a large extent, on the fund of funds, for example, from the government as a guidance to bring them into the market. So yeah, I think for more traditional sectors or the early stage investors also expect the startups to get enough support from the government, because they will provide a lot of incentives and a lot of them are equity free. So if you get that support, I think this is a sort of, for other investor, private investors, it's a good sign, basically. Based on my personal experience, we talked to different local governments in China when we decided to set up a startup, and we before we decided where to set up in China. So we talked to different local governments, try to understand what kind of support they can provide. And once we decide that, you know, we got sort of like endorsement from the government, then other investors will definitely take our ideas or companies more seriously, and it's easier and easier to attract other funds.
Okay, understand. And in general, what Luis also mentioned earlier, this change that more and more ex-founders are becoming business angels and investing more into the market, is this also something that you see from the Chinese perspective?
Probably not to the extent that you see in Europe, but that's my personal opinion. After all, I'm not on the field in China. Maybe there are some latest change or trend, but yeah, I heard more cases in Europe like that, I'll say.
Yeah, Luis, giving it over to you. What do you think are the main changes for the environment in Europe?
Yeah, you've just mentioned again. I think because there are those huge financing rounds, there are very successful companies building up. It has very many different effects. First of all, it has the effect that after exits, founders invest the exit proceeds at least partly into startups, which is great. Second is, of course, role models. A lot of people finishing university thinking about of what to do next see that there's, if you have a good team, a good idea, and the market opportunity, that it's viable to found a company and get funded and start building something great, and which is helpful. And third, also the employees of those well-funded startups, like, I don't know, but when I look at pitch decks recently, a lot of them come from grown-up startups, like in the fintech industry, N26, for example, a lot of ex-employees, or from other startups that have, from a very early stage, how the company scaled, how the funding went, that it everything went well up to now, and that it's a viable option to finish their like employee relationship and found something themselves. I think that are three very relevant effects. The fourth effect, when you look from a like investor's perspective, of course, is that the competition rises for good investments, that financing rounds get larger, like seed rounds, pre-seed rounds, several million are possible in Europe, that also valuations rises, that if you have a competitive deal, the terms get more and more dictated by the founders. But it is important to understand that we are talking about a very small like percentage of deals in total, right? There are a few deals where the competition is very high, where the founders have great networks, great business angels already on board, huge market opportunities and knowledge. And they kind of are flying away from like what is happening in the rest of the venture capital industry, like day-to-day business, day-to-day financing rounds. But I've also, for sooner or later, there will be spillover effects. But when we look into our deal flow, when we talk to first-time founders without a network, with a good idea, but with a team not fully complete, or not knowing what actually venture capital is, how to structure around, it's completely different discussion. But still, like as I said, there will be spillover effects. Education on what venture capital is, how contracts are designed, will also trickle down. And I think it's just like maturity stage that we already reach in parts of the market that will trickle down to the whole market sooner or later.
I think Luis brought up a very good point, which is serial entrepreneurs. Actually, this is also very prominent in China. You can hear a lot of good stories about entrepreneurs who got their success from their last venture, and jump on a second journey or third journey even to become serial entrepreneurs for something new for themselves. I think this is also quite common in China, I would say. But after all, if you look at the history of Chinese VC, the golden age in the past 10 to 15 years had a lot of success. So I think this right now is the phase where some of the successful figures from those stories come out and form something else for themselves. Yeah, I think we are at this stage in China right now. So I guess give it another 5-10 years when they get older, probably you will see more angels from them. Right now, it's too early for them to retire.
Yeah, makes sense. And I mean, when we also look at these big tech companies, right, like Tencent or Alibaba or also newer ones, I mean, these have been startups as well a few years ago. And so many people probably also get out of it and then think, okay, what can I do now? And they found startups themselves or get people together and so on. So yeah, super interesting that we have this parallel development there, kind of. What I would like to also go into a bit now is quickly the point of view of the pandemic. We already quickly touched it before. What would you say are the main changes that the pandemic has induced in your respective ecosystems?
Yes, so most probably there are a lot of developments that I won't mention right now, but for me, like in my everyday work, one of the most obvious topics is digitalization, virtualization of the whole investment process, and which I think boils down to the point of also more cross-border transactions, because it's just not relevant anymore where you are based, where the founders are based. Everything can be done digitally, like in many other jobs. But I think for venture capital, yeah, you talk to people, you negotiate there's no need if you don't want to do it in person. I'm, although young, a bit old school, I always try to meet the teams I invest in at least one time before the investment. But it's not an obligatory step anymore that you say, okay, in our investment process, we want the team to come to our office, for example, and look them in the eyes and decide if like it makes sense to prolong the process. So I think that's one huge topic. The second one I tackled shortly, the whole digitalization, although it's a trend for 20 years, most probably, I think it was a huge acceleration for very many industries, because just looking at sales, for example, even like this, our startups doing B2B sales with long sales cycles, it was always, okay, we have to go to the customer once, then we have to go to the customer twice. Now, because it's impossible, a lot of sales tools are established, a lot of digital processes are established on the buyer side, but also on the seller side. If you look at e-commerce, although also an old trend with those fast commerce startups rising the last year, also an acceleration of a trend. So I think a huge acceleration of a lot of developments that have been ongoing. I mean, for example, also home office. Before COVID, we had the home office rule, and now it's everyone is in home office. So a huge acceleration of all those decentralized digital processes and business models that are building on top of that.
Yeah, Chao, do you see this similarly?
Actually, it's quite different, I would say, because during this pandemic, how things developed in China and outside China is very different. And so because of the policy that Chinese government have taken on the pandemic, so that the life and the situations went back to normal fairly quickly in China. So for all the stuff that Louis just mentioned, it's rather short-lived in China. Yeah. So very quickly, things went back to normal and you don't see that impact too much anymore. And about the digitization trend and everything, yeah, no offense, but most of them have been done in China already. So it's in that sense, it's quite different for things in China. But for me, through this pandemic, what I see is, what I feel more confident about is that there's a mutual need between foreign investors and the Chinese market, because China again becomes the engine of the world economy, right? In the past couple of years during this difficult time. So the market has shown a lot of resiliency and the potential. So that means this is of course attractive to foreign investors. On the flip side, I mean, Chinese market is taking this window to push even more to promote the capitalization, industrialization, and the technology upgrade. So of course, this requires a lot of help, including foreign investors. So I would say this is a case where we can see that globally we need each other. And that's basically my takeaway from this observation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Quite interesting to see these different views on the developments from both your sides. As the last point of interest I would like to go into and where I would like to get your opinion would be, what do you think how the VC and the startup markets in your respective areas, so in China and in Europe, will evolve over the next decade? Do you see some main drivers? Do you see milestones where you think this will definitely happen? Maybe you can highlight two each or one even, just to get a bit of understanding, where do you think the market will develop over the next decade?
Yeah, so I think I've mentioned a few topics. I think that the capital coming into Europe will be more and more international, but also for early financing, which is then, as I've mentioned, helping the whole ecosystem become more and more mature and to be a relevant, have a relevant contribution to the main topics that we are facing, climate change or others. The conclusion for me for the future, more capital, more founders, thus because there's more capital possible and more bright minds that try to change what is in front of us. And yeah, I don't know the US market too much, but I believe that there will be a homogenization around the world venture capital wise in the end because of those investors that invest all over the world with the same funds.
Okay. And do you have like a special or like a favorite technology that you would say this is like the thing that's definitely gonna change everything over the next decade? From your personal view, is it tokenization? Is it some area in the digital health space, or is it something different maybe?
Let me think about it for a second.
Okay, sure. Yeah, Chao, what do you think? Where will the Chinese startup ecosystem and the VC market develop over the next decade?
I wish I know golden areas to invest in, but my personal wish will be actually more emphasize or stress on traditional sector. And I think this fits the needs of the market and the interest of the people. And in general, I'm very optimistic because if you look at the education level of China at the moment, I think there's only around 15% of the population received college level education. So this number is rather low actually comparing to other developed countries. So that means there's still a lot of room to improve for China. And actually the trend I believe is going up for sure. So given this talent coming up, and also the government and society will provide a big enough stage for them for innovation. So in general, I think I'm quite optimistic for coming decades for Chinese market, VC markets.
Mm-hmm. And also the same question that I posed to Luis, do you have a favorite technology or area, startup area, where you say this is definitely going to change the society over the next, let's say 10 years? Is there something you say this is super special, super interesting for you?
I think energy transition. I think this is a topic that got global consensus that will change the way people live and the people see things. I think I really believe in this tech area, and it will affect our life not for decades and for several decades for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. And Luis, did you think about it?
Yeah, like what I thought. I also think that most probably the more traditional, like as Chao also said, the more traditional sectors will become more relevant again. I mean, if you think about, for example, Flink or Gorillas, of course, it's scaling right now, but it's a convenience topic, right? And I think in the future, like, there will be pressing topics that have to be solved, where we will come back to the question, what are like basic technologies, what possibilities do they have, and how to develop them further, for example, in energy, but also other topics, infrastructure most probably as well, a relevant topic, how to solve, how to like move people in the future or at all. And then again, it will boil down to hardware, deep tech investments that most probably will have larger financing rounds, because otherwise it's not possible to develop.
Thanks a lot, guys. You gave some really cool insights, knowledgeable what you said. And yeah, it was very nice to see these developments and also to look at the similarities and differences. I guess we could have went on for a couple more hours to talk about this topic. Super interesting in general. I just want to thank you again for taking part today, and I hope to speak with you guys about these developments in the coming years again, probably.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Max, for the invitation. And good luck with the following podcast series and listeners.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Bridge to China, a podcast by Humboldt Tech Bridge. If you want to find out more about what we do, head to our website, humboldt-tech-bridge.com. For feedback, you can write us an email at info@humboldt-tech-bridge.com. This podcast is produced by ILU, the community of European and Chinese changemakers.